둘, 셋, 파!
For Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
To find out what's really going on behind the music, sometimes you have to dig deep. I'm Dr. Mike, and on the new season of Going There, we're doing just that.
Art or music can be your escape and your therapy.
Going There is the podcast at the crossroads of music and mental health, where we have raw, meaningful conversations with artists like Noah Kahan, Julian Baker, Jason Isbell, Youngblood, The Head and the Heart, and Bishop Briggs.
I recently heard someone describe grief as glitter, where you'll clean it up and then you'll find little pieces.
By opening ourselves up to these real discussions about mental health, we can foster understanding and gain even greater appreciation for the music we all love.
For me, like, my favorite songs give me happy tears.
So join me and some of your favorite artists on the new season of Going There with Dr. Mike, brought to you by SoundMind Live and the Consequence Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out, it's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer, and then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With, an audio interview series presented by WFPK Independent Louisville, Consequence of Sound, and the Consequence Podcast Network. I'm Kyle Meredith, and today I've got John Prine, legendary country Americana singer, and this might be one of my all-time favorite interviews. We're talking about his new record, The Tree of Forgiveness, and I've also got him telling stories about Dan Auerbach, Phil Spector, and a bunch of scientists that made him upset when they called Pluto a dwarf and a star and not a planet. It's Kyle Meredith with John Prine.
Hey, Kyle, it's John Prine.
How are you, John?
Really good. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Well, hello from Louisville, Kentucky. It's great to hear you up here, especially getting to talk about this new record, The Tree of Forgiveness. Thank you for the music on this one again.
Oh, you're welcome. It's been really great so far. Everything, the record's being accepted like really well. It's sung better than any of my records before, so
yeah,
I guess it's doing all right.
I don't know why you waited so long, you know, all this adoration that comes your way these days.
I was just writing slow and thinking, well, when I get 10 songs I like, I'll go in the studio. And my wife, Fiona, and she's managing me now. And our son, Joji's running the record company. They came to me last year and said, hey, it's time to make a record. And I said, really? And they put me in a hotel suite with 10 boxes of unfinished lyrics. I didn't know I had
10 boxes of lyrics. How are all of those songs just over like the past decade? Or is this like your lifetime's work that just hadn't made it out of the songs?
It's just part of it. I thought I threw these things. I just write things down on pieces of paper and then I forget about them, you know. And I guess they save these scraps of paper. So I had, there's enough stuff there to jog my memory that I thought, oh yeah, I meant to write that song or this one. Basically, I'm pretty lazy guy. You know, I just didn't do anything in the world besides write a song. It used to be my hobby when I was a mailman. You know, that was my big escape from life, was I'd go write a song. But now it's my job, and when something is my job, I run the other way.
That might be different than losing the desire to write new songs, though. I mean, have you ever got to the point where you just, like, you know, you think of an idea, you write it down, but did you ever get to that point where it's like, you know what, I just don't feel like being a songwriter right now?
No, because I know that doesn't come along all the time, you know? Yeah. I don't like to force it. I kind of like, I would rather be walking down the street and go, oh, that's a great idea, you know, instead of sitting there with a pencil sharpener and trying to go, okay, what can I write about today?
Yeah.
It's just like, I kind of trust it more if it comes from my gut. And, you know, I just figure it have a better chance of being something good that might last.
Well, it's worked for you so far. There's so many classics out there and so many great songs. But this new record, you know, it's all your hallmarks are here. These great story songs. I do wonder, like, how much of this record would you say is your story versus the story of characters, the Americana of the world?
There's a little bit of me in all the songs, but not enough to do anybody any harm. When I used to put a lot of names in songs, I'd get stuff like some relatives would call me up and go, is that me in the song? You know, I go, no, that's just your name. It's not you. And so, like, you could get in trouble if you tell somebody's story and don't tell them about it.
Now, I wonder if any of your older songs, have any of your older songs, do any of them have drastically different meanings to you now than maybe when you wrote them?
No, not really. I mean, you know, I mean, I don't try and write something that's got a hidden message or anything. I prefer to just put it flat out there. And if it's a joke, I hope people get it. And if it's a story, I hope people get it. You know, I don't try and disguise any of the songs as something else.
It is really impressive how, because not every song ages really, really well, and your songs do. I mean, even songs that were so about something specific, like Flag Decal, I mean, to me, that still resonates as hard in 2018 than when you wrote it back then, which is...
I mean, I would have given that song about 2 years for a life,
right?
You know, back then, because I thought, you know, when Vietnam War is over, when there's the silent majority, or I'm not silent anymore, like, this song will be old. And it just never got that old.
Do you still sing that now in your live sets?
I do. I sing it every night. Uh-huh. Mainly because of that person that's in the White House.
Uh-huh. It's one of the first songs I played on the air the day after the election. Just made the most
was
sense.
Was that right? Yeah, I kind of, the other night, we played Indianapolis Saturday night, and I was feeling a little grumpy, you know, over things in Washington, D.C. I dedicated to that a-hole in the White House, you know, and I got some cheers, and looked like a couple of people in the front row got up and left, so I'm not sure if they knew what I was writing about all these years.
I'm always surprised in that, the people who walk out on shows like that, especially, you know, the ones who claim to have been fans for a long time, and you think, really? Really? Were you listening?
Yeah. I know. I saw a couple of things on the internet where people, I don't know what song they were going towards, but it was like, how could you leave us, John? And I thought, who is this, the NRA? I mean, it's really, I mean, I don't understand. Like, if people don't figure out kind of where I'm coming from after all these years.
Well, another side of things is, you know, some of your songwriting partners of the past few years. Of course, we're also big fans of Dan Auerbach around here. And
Dan's a great guy.
Yeah, he seems to be playing a big part of your career right now. And I don't know if that's just because Dan likes to wave the John Prine flag pretty big. But how important is the partnership been with Dan lately?
Well, we got together, when was it? It's been about almost 2 years. There was four of us that we hang out anyway. You know, I go play cards with Dan. He likes to have poker nights at his house. And I met him when he first hit town through a common friend of ours, David Ferguson. Fergie is, me and Fergie kind of co-owned a studio for a while and called The Butcher Shop. And I think that's how I first met Dan when he came to town. And I think we tried to write something then. Nothing happened. I think we just went to lunch and forgot about it. But about a year and a half ago, Pat McLaughlin, David Ferguson, and Dan and myself. We got together over at Dan's house, and I thought we were writing for, he was thinking about doing his first solo record, and I thought that's what we were doing. We wrote 6 songs in 2 days. They just kind of flew out, you know, and I didn't really think about any of the songs were for me, but I ended up recording 2 of them on Tree of Forgiveness, Caravan of Fools, and Boundless Love.
I love your all's partnership. I love what you've done to Dan's songwriting too. And I know, like I said, he's been singing those praises as well. But it's been a really fun partnership to listen to.
The first song that we wrote out of that bunch was the title song for Dan's record.
Oh right,
Waiting
right.
on a Song. I walked into the room and 3 of my buddies are sitting there with yellow legal pads and pencils, and I said, "Looks like you guys are waiting on a song." And then bang, we went into the We just started writing. It just kind of fell out of us, you know.
I mean, it takes a special kind of sight, I think, to recognize those moments, because people say stuff every day, but rarely does one person go, "Oh, there it is, there it is." And that, I mean, that's got to be the Nashville talent right there, like the third eye.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, I mean, I didn't think I talked in song titles, but I guess sometimes I do.
A lot of the recent research in Sonos came from, you know, the younger songwriters waving that pride flag. Dan, of course, our friends Jason and Amanda. And
I love Jason Isbell's music and Amanda's too.
Oh, just it's amazing stuff. I was thinking a minute ago, though, you get a lot of older rockers, and they can't always identify with the younger rockers. But, you know, Americana roots, country, whatever you want to call it, that doesn't seem to ever be the case. Like, the connection from you to them seems a lot easier than, I don't know, from the Stones to
Muse. Yeah, no, it's not too much of a stretch for me, you know, I mean, to appreciate their music. I mean, I first took notice of Jason because he mentioned that I was an influence in his writing. Fiona said, "Have you heard this guy?" And then the Southeastern record came out, and Fiona hadn't seen it. And I went home. I said, "You got to listen to this." I said, "This record is chock full of really great songs." And I always listen in my car. That's the best place for me. I hardly ever listen in the house. I have an office, but I never go to it.
I don't know how everybody will feel about the statement, but I know when you came out, you know, everybody threw out that tired old phrase of the next Dylan, but it's hard not to look at Isbell and say, "Well, there's the next John Prine right there."
Well, that's okay, because this John Prine just didn't be on vacation.
I'd love to ask about a couple of the songs on this record, too. I think my favorite, and there is so many on here, but I think I keep centering in on Lonesome Friends of Science.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites, too.
What's the story with that one?
Well, it was kind of something that kicked me off for ever since I first read about it. I guess it was about 10 years ago when I saw a little thing in the newspaper where like 3 or 4 scientists got together in a room and decided that Pluto was no longer a planet. And that just really pissed me off. Because I remember back in 5th grade, I had to memorize all those planets. And now they're just saying that all of a sudden it's not a planet, it's just a star up in the sky. And then they come back 5 years later and they go, "Okay, you're a planet, but you're a dwarf planet." That's like kicking him while he's down, you know? And I thought somebody should say something about this. And I'll be darned if I'm not getting letters from, we're in California right now, I'm in Hollywood. I'm going up to Silicon Valley, and I got a letter from a scientist up there that might have been one of the guys that said decided Pluto wasn't a planet. And I got an invitation at Yale to go to this planetarium when we play Boston later this month. And the guy said, in this letter, he referenced my song Space Monkey. He said he's been working 4.5 monkey years at the planetarium, and he doesn't wear a white lab coat. And he wanted to explain to me why they weren't referencing Pluto as a planet anymore. And he invited me to the planetarium. I don't know. It depends on how early in the morning I got to get up to go see it. But it's just kind of funny to be getting, after I write a song like that, to get letters from the scientific community, you know.
And the lines in that, I mean, I had a few chuckles too, because I'm hoping I remember it right here. You know, when you're talking about, you know, you get your mail in Tennessee, which was just one of those great lines. But you said you're talking about that area of the song anyway. And you said, I think you said my wife, my dog, my kids. And I thought me. I thought the dog came before the kids. That's the interesting
part.
I know.
I thought of that too. But, you know, the number one thing for me when I'm writing words is how the word sounds. You know, it's not like what the word means.
It's not the placement.
And I thought at least I didn't put the dog before my wife. You know, I put my wife, my dog, my kids, and me.
Because you would have been sleeping in the doghouse.
Yeah, I tried to actually reverse it and put the dog last, but it just didn't sing right. So the kids would just have to wait behind the dog. That's all there is to it.
I love that you considered it. I really do. I love that crossed your mind.
I do. I actually consider things before I commit them down to history.
There's a story behind the song God Only Knows, too, right? This has a connection to Phil Spector?
Yeah, I wrote one with Phil back in 1978. I put it on my Bruce Orange record. It was really odd how I happened to meet him. You familiar with the journalist Robert Hilburn? He wrote for the LA Times for years and years. Now he's writing books, but anyway... he was an early champion of my music out in L.A., and I was out here doing some press, just like I am now, and I ran into him, and I said, well, what are you up to? And he goes, well, I'm trying to write a book on Phil Spector. I said, I'm interviewing him every night at his house. He says, it's a real circus. You want to come up there with me? And I said, well, Phil Spector wouldn't know me from Adam. And he said he was quoting Donald and Lydia the other night. I said, well, I better go up and meet this guy. I said, okay. And it was right at the time that he had produced Leonard Cohen's record, but he hadn't put it out yet. So he was anxious to play that for me. He took me in his snooker room. He turned it up to 11. And Leonard Cohen, the music was making the balls like vibrate across the table. That's how loud he was playing it for me. And it was pretty much a circus. He had two goons, like bodyguards behind him wherever he went. And his kids came running downstairs at one point and to say goodnight to him. They put PJs on him. He said, who's the king of rock and roll? And they went, you are, Daddy, you are. And this it was like this for about 3-4 hours. And I thought, okay, I've had enough. I'm going to take off. I thanked him for, you know, for the refreshments and everything. And I started heading for the door. And he was walking me to the door. And we passed by a piano. He sat down at the piano and handed me an unplugged electric guitar. And we wrote a song called If You Don't Want My Love in about 30 minutes. And he was just, when he sat down to play music, he wasn't goofing off at all. He was straightforward and a normal guy. And I went back 6 months later to play him the song because I recorded it with back in Chicago. And when I went back to play it for him, we wrote half of this other song, this God Only Knows. And I had tried to finish it for years and kept putting it up on the shelf. So this seemed like a good record to finish it for.
I mean, for a guy to have as sordid history as he does and then to be that musical genius that we've all heard about, and you got to witness that firsthand, that's
exactly
really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, when he was, I don't know what he was like as a producer. I've heard it was pretty much a circus when he was producing people. Like, he'd do all kinds of mind games on them. But as far as sitting down with a guy to write Dead Nuts on, I don't know if that'll get him out any earlier. But
no, man, Prine, he vouches for you. It's fine. It's
yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, the guy that wrote Loads of Friends of Science is vouching for you.
Well, thank God you did write that song. And again, I mean, I could go on and on about this record. Summer's End is just a beautiful song, and Knockin' is so much fun.
Yeah.
It's an instant classic.
I love that Summer's End. Me and Pat McLaughlin wrote that, and we wrote a really pretty song for the Fair and Square record too, called Taking a Walk.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it kind of reminds me of that. It's that sort of song. You know, it's got a bittersweet quality to it, I'd say.
Well, it's instantly one of, you know, it goes on the greatest hits, the next greatest hits that the label packages
right
out there.
Thank
so. I'll vouch for you on that one. I'll co-sign. So it's
okay. All right,
John. It's been such a pleasure talking to you again. And you know, as I'm leaving, you know, of course, you know, we're here in Kentucky, so you know, a lot of your songs mean stuff. I think Paradise ends up being one of the unofficial themes around here. I grew up not far from Muhlenberg in Grayson County, so that song is just etched.
We played
in
Ohio County the other night.
I saw that.
We played Beaver Dam. It was the most attended concert they've had since the amphitheater opened. There's 4,000 people, and I opened and closed with Paradise.
Oh, wow. Opened, that's like, and Willie Nelson does that, too. That's, you're the only two people I've ever heard that do that.
Well, that's the only place I've ever done that. I figure if I don't open with it, if I don't sing it early on in the show, people are going to be hollering all the way through the night. So I opened with it, and then I said at the end, I said, okay, if you didn't get it the first time, here's your next, your second chance. And everybody sang along. It was really cool.
Never get tired of that song. Why would you? That's great. I wish I'd see that.
Well, I got a backdrop we're carrying on this tour where about half the time it's the old post office in Paradise. They all appreciated that, too.
I know you'll be back in Louisville, too, so can't wait to see the show. Yeah,
I know. I always enjoy playing there. That's where I get most of my relatives.
Oh, up here?
Show in Louisville, yeah.
And it's right next door to us at the Palace. We actually we share a wall with the Palace, so I don't have to walk far.
Do you?
Yeah.
Well, great. Well, I hope to see you down at the show.
All right, John. Thanks so much for giving me the call today and for this new record.
You bet, Kyle. Thank you.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks so much to John Prine for giving me that call today. The new album is called The Tree of Forgiveness. Don't forget to subscribe to Consequence of Sound's YouTube channel to keep up with your favorite artists and interviews. For you podcast listeners, please do head over to iTunes or Podchaser. Give us a rating and review while you're over there. And then head to WFPK.org, where I do a show every Monday through Thursday from noon to 3 Eastern. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.